Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 FM, and I've got Dave Sparky Saganaki along with me here too.
That's right. Good morning, everybody. Right. That's Michael Tech Talk Castler. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome, man. It's a start of another beautiful weekend here in Chicago. You're of course up north of the border. But I think it's just going to be a beautiful weekend, pretty much all over the Midwest and northern region of the states. So so not a bad time to be stuck inside of an 8x4 room talking into a hunk of metal. So
it's bigger than most closets.
This is true. Yeah, it would be a nice walk-in closet for someone, or alternatively, Studio A. Oh man,
it's a radio home and we love it. I wish I was there with you right now.
Absolutely, we wish you were here too, for sure. And in fact, I don't know if you realize, but we're speaking with award-winning host Dave Sparky Saganaki. You were not there for the GEO Awards, but you were a proud winner of Talk Show Excellence. Winning an award in Talk Show Excellence. I won one as well. I think just for being around for a long enough time that they had to throw a bone at me, you know, something.
It's nice that we got the awards. We thank the committee very much for their tough deliberations, and also they spared no expense running those awards off on the Xerox machine.
This is true. Hey, at least they're holding together. You know, I was kind of bummed out. I didn't get one of the. They have these really special awards for the special members, and really it is a nice thing that they do. Is they create these awards that look like an old timey kind of microphone, and then there's the name of the individual and the award that they win, and some, you know, Chris Zeman, I know, is our IT person extraordinaire, has done a fabulous job holding the station together almost literally with chewing gum, duct tape, and baling wire some weeks, and he gets one of these awards. They're very nice looking, but unfortunately they can't get the glue right for the nameplate thing that goes on there, and they keep pulling apart. So at least our Xerox awards, you can hang it on the wall and not have to worry that it's just gonna, you know, unroll itself somehow.
That seems very fitting for our rickety operation.
You know, it's a good point. It actually does. It does work quite well. It's iconic, is what it is. Man, well, gosh. But other than that, I mean, outside of that, you know, and it's just a great thing that the station's been around for as long as it has, and Bish and all the rest of everybody that's pulling the thing together have done just a fantastic job and kept it alive and kept it true to its mission, which is to be live, exciting community volunteer radio with lots of interesting and eclectic programming, including things like the Tech Talk Show, which we're here.
That's right. It's good to be here. It's good to be on.
Yeah.
And what do we have for technology news this morning?
Oh, gosh. There's a bunch of stuff. And we're going to bring we're going to bring Jay on here in a few minutes as well. Of course, we'll have our cool sites of the week at the end of the week. I think I can actually even fit some in this week. We don't have any other things fitting in the way. The big news, though, we were talking about this last week. We were geeked up and excited, so thrilled about the idea of the new Samsung Galaxy Gear watches that were going to come out, and it turns out Qualcomm came out with something called Talk, and of course they couldn't spell it like you would pronounce it. It's spelled T-O-Q, but the Talk smartwatch came out this last week, and I was underwhelmed. I don't know. I did you get any of the information about the smartwatches and what was available for them and all that?
I've been out of that loop a little bit. What can you tell us about them?
Oh, like I said, I'm putting my feelings right on my sleeve here. I was underwhelmed. I was so excited. We were talking last week. One of the big things for me is the Quantify Self movement, you know, tracking your steps. I've got a Jawbone up on my arm right now, courtesy of Verizon letting me check that out for a while. I love stuff like that. My Samsung Galaxy S4 that I had for a little while had that built into the phone. You know, I use Runkeeper. This would be such a simple and easy thing you would think to include in a smartwatch, and I assumed that Samsung, especially since they're including this quantified self information on their S4 model, would have put it in their smartwatch. They did not. They chose not to. The other thing I think that was a big mistake that they made, it's just too large. It's too darn big. I've seen the pictures of it with people having it on their wrists, and it looks just way too much like those giant geeky calculator watches we were making fun of last show. And there's a lot of good things to be said about it. It's got the Bluetooth connectivity like we talked about. You can make and receive phone calls from it. There's, of course, a huge array of different watch faces and weather information and updates that you can get. You know, as Jay and I and you were talking last week, you can get your Twitter feed and your weather and your Facebook notification right there. Here's one rather big downside, though, as well, for immediate or quick adoption into the marketplace. The phone isn't, the watch isn't matched up with any existing phones. You can't use it today with anything that you already own from Samsung.
That
blew my mind. I was like, what are they, crazy? How tough would it be to just hook the Bluetooth anyways and make that work? But no, you have to buy one of the new Samsung tabs or phones that are coming out. It's only right now, in fact, approved for usage with one Samsung phone, which hasn't quite made it out yet, and that'll be out soon. But, you know, I'm like...
So it has no legacy. It has no legacy capability, is what you're saying.
No. Nope. Not at all. Not at all. This is... And I think, you know, based on the look of it, this is kind of what you're going to get, is you're going to get this small subset of people who really want it, and they're going to have it with that new phone. But it's not going to take the world by storm. It's not going to insert smartphone gadgetry into our daily life and consciousness. If you see it, it's going to be a rarity.
Michael, I remember a similar pronouncement about the iPad from both of us, by the way. Since we both were like, the two of us, I think we did like a 20-minute rant about how inadequate the iPad was when it first came out. We were like, this is a disaster. We couldn't have panned it more strongly, and guess what?
Yeah,
we were pretty wrong.
Well, I
know. Who knows? Are we the target market for this? You know, what are the demographics that they're looking for in this device? Maybe we're past that target.
That you could be right. You could be right. Now, I'm not saying that smartwatches aren't going to make it. Period. I'm just saying the Samsung Galaxy watch here, unfortunately, just didn't hit the mark. Can they turn it around? And maybe once these phones and tablets that Samsung has got that are going to work with this start hitting the market, maybe this will start getting picked up a little more and you'll get some traction with it. And then the next revision of the Galaxy gadget phone, smart watch, whatever you want to call this thing, will take some market share. I just don't see this happening with this revision. There's just not enough utility, and they missed out on that. Like I said, the big Quantify Self movement. I That would be the killer app for this thing. This is why you've got the Fitbit and the Jawbone just doing so great. Why would Samsung not do it? I don't understand, Dave.
I'm sorry, Michael. Take it easy. It'll be okay.
I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed. I wanted this to work. Now, I have seen some really cool concept watches that I am excited about that I think are going to be coming. Like I said, I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that the wearable smartwatch is going to be dead. I think that it is something we're going to see a lot of in the next couple of years. I just don't think this is the one. I've seen some cool concept art stuff for watches that look not like watches, but are more like bracelet shaped. And I think that would be pretty cool. And you could easily bridge that divide with women's wearable fashions and these smart watches. You could create smaller versions for businessmen and businesswomen. You know, you don't want a big hunk of something that is so obnoxious and in your face on your arm. It just isn't appropriate in a lot of settings. So I think the versions that appeal to me are the ones that are slim. They're slim, they're sleek, they fit underneath your long sleeved button down, without causing a lot of headache, and we'll have some of these connectivity things worked out and some of the usefulness worked out.
Well, as we discussed last week too, this is a market that's never been successful to this point.
No,
so it'll be interesting to see. All these people are rushing the market. Who knows what'll happen?
Yeah.
We just don't know.
Well, and that's I think is a core difference too between the iPad versus the what we're talking about here, the Galaxy Watch and so on, is that with the iPad, that really was a brand new kind of thing. There wasn't even Jobs really created the market for that and for that device, and so it was very
there were other tablets out before that, but not that light, not with such great battery life, and that it wasn't that big a step, really. I mean, and I think it's the same thing with the Galaxy Gear or whatever other markets, other wearable gear is coming to market. There's going to be so many different things flooding the market. Something's going to have to stick, whether it's the Galaxy Gear or the iWatch or the other half of the Sony's coming out with one. Something's bound to stick.
Yep. As much as I hate to admit it, the iWatch will probably be the one that'll work the best, and it'll be the most useful and all that. Now that was another complaint from the a lot of people had about the Samsung smartwatch coming out was the price point. $300 for this thing, and it won't stand alone.
They're bundling it with the Galaxy Note 3. Some phone companies are you can get the Gear and the new phablet for around the $600 range.
Okay, so that keeps it in the price of one of the brand new. If you got a brand new off the shelf iPad, it's a little bit more than that, and this would give you both a mini tab and the watch. Yeah, I think it's still a bit high price wise, but I feel that about everything that I can't get for free. So,
yeah, I think the combination of Google Glass and their watch might be very attractive. But we haven't gotten our hands on anything. One thing to read about it in the abstract. It's another thing to put it on your wrist and see what all it does.
Yeah.
And with that, when you're talking about technology of that size, you're talking about trade-offs. There's only so much technology or electronics you can get into a small form factor like that will work. You have to compromise this. You can't have everything. You have to eliminate something.
Yep. Yep. No, that's very true. And to the Galaxy Gear's credit, it's got a camera on it, which is a huge benefit. One of the things that does disappoint me a lot of times is I just and it's so first world, this problem. It's like, oh, what a beautiful scene this is. Look at the woodland creatures playing beautifully together. What a gorgeous picture this would be of me and my family. But gosh, you know, no, it's way too much trouble to actually take my phone out of my pocket and have to, you know, flip into the phone app. Nah, never mind. Is it worth the $300 to me to not have to, you know, go through the trouble of pulling something out of my pocket in order to take a picture for posterity? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, that'll be the great convenience of Google Glass. It wasn't really a confrontation. I had an interaction with a youngster a few days ago in a restaurant, and I said, this is all being recorded. Like, it's being recorded. I said, yeah. I said, you know, you've heard of Google Glass? Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. I said, yeah. I said, I don't have Google Glass. I said, I've got Google corneas. And and everything's going straight to YouTube right now. You know, the kid, yeah. It actually scared the kid. I felt bad about it.
That's fantastic. I love it. And, you know, we're not that far away, though, from when that's going to be a reality, either Google Cornea or something that is, constantly recording and could be broadcasting at any moment.
I think our earlobes, we're not doing anything with our earlobes, right? Well, earrings, that's the thing. That's Google earrings.
You know?
Now the kids are putting, have you seen where they stretch their earlobes by putting discs
yes.
in them? Have you seen that?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's perfect for, you know, electronics.
I like it. High-tech tribal. This is the way of the future, man. I do. I love it. I love it.
Sure. MP3 player, camera, you know, get all that in your earlobe.
Definitely. Well, you know, but the smartwatch is a good step towards that. That's happening now, with the camera and certainly with the ability to record from there because you've got the audio in and so on. I see that as being a useful business or legal tool when you're how do you tell anymore? Like, you know, it used to be the big thing in all those crime movies was hey, is he wearing a wire, you know, and all this. It's like, but guess what, everybody's wearing a wire now. There's no, what are you gonna do, you know? How do you keep people from wearing a wire anymore unless you're gonna take away their cell phones and their wristwatches and their glasses and everything else? Everybody's wired.
Yeah, well, and even when we fly, we want to, you know, at the latest, you know, here's a story that, by the way, that's right up your alley. You always complain about not being able to use your devices on airplanes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Wi-Fi is coming to airplanes.
Yes.
And it's, I don't know how they came up with this question, but the question was, would you swap toilet access for good Wi-Fi in flight?
Mm-hmm. On shorter flights, absolutely. Now on a trip from here to LA or Seattle,
that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. you'd swap toilet access for Wi-Fi.
Yeah, because here's how I fly. Now I travel a lot, right? So I've got my whole routine worked out. And here's my deal: I go online. I always make sure I try to always get the window seat. And I'll even go on the day before and even, you know, go to the kiosk to make sure that I get that window seat. Because I go in, I sit down, I read my book. I don't want anybody to bother me. I don't want to talk to anybody. I've got my headphones on. Even if I don't have music, I'm going to have my headphones on just so people don't think they can talk to me. And I'm fine there. I'm good there for my hour and a half flight. I'll get my little Diet Coke. I usually bring a sack lunch on with me. The number of times that I've had to actually use the washroom in flight, I could count on one hand. And it's always either on long flights, you know, that's a different story. But on those short flights, it's always because it was like a transfer or something and I didn't have time to stop in the washroom before getting on the plane. Who likes using the washrooms on the plane anyways? They're terrible. They're absolutely horrible.
Anyway, CNET, CNET has this article about, they did a survey. 13% of American airline passengers that were surveyed said they trade toilet access for good Wi-Fi in flight.
Here's how you make that work. Wi-Fi's free.
No, here, Wi-Fi's, no way to make
sure. Wi-Fi's free. Wi-Fi's free. Using the toilet, yeah. $5 a go.
$5 a go.
and your time, you know, you don't want to block that thing up. I like that. I would be all on for that, you know. Absolutely. Give me free Wi-Fi. Keep me happy as a pig in a poke, occupied, sitting in my chair, nobody bugging me, and I'm writing emails or doing whatever. And if I really made that mistake and desperately need to go to the washroom, you know, yeah, fine. I'm good with that. I'll pull $5 out of my pocket to do that. You know, if I got to go that bad, I'll do it for $5. But man, yeah, I would in a heartbeat for Wi-Fi. I don't think you could take toilets You're off sick. The plane entirely because you'd wind up with problems.
No, you couldn't. You could hand out diapers, I guess.
Yeah.
I
mean, you know, well, I think that's one thing that you would see is, you know, those little kiosks outside of the gates at the airport, oftentimes selling you credit cards. And I, for some reason, I see this all the time is these Rosetta Stone software. You know, like people are going to drop $300 right outside of a gate. I don't know why. But at any rate, but I could see standing outside of the gate and being selling those little, catheter things. And the sport potties, you know, or whatever they call them.
Have you seen the Best Buy vending machines with all the headphones and MP3 players and all that stuff in them?
Yep. Yes, I have. Fit them right in there. Yeah. That would work out beautifully. Because you know, if you start charging or if you keep them off of there at all, you are going to wind up with the guy who's going to decide to make a point, you know. And he's just gonna stand at the coffee station, you know, say, hey, I'm not paying no $5, I'm just letting loose right here.
God, I don't know, Michael, I think you're just really, really sick. I think I do. You're just too hooked up. You're just too hooked up to technology, I think.
I want an impromptu off the cuff survey here of listeners. I know there's like about three of you, but of the three people listening, go to facebook.com/techtalkwrlr and just post on there and say, dude, I'm with you. I'm ready. $5 bathroom, free Wi-Fi. I'm on board for that. Or if you disagree with me, you know, that's fine too. I promise I'll I probably won't delete those.
Crazy. Hey, have you heard about Oyster? Speaking about reading books on planes.
Oh, yes, I have. You know, I was gonna mention that when we brought Jay on, and it's about time I bring him up anyways.
Why don't we do it?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Let me see if I can find his thing. Yeah, I was really excited about that, and there's some articles out saying, oh, you know, the day of the book is finally dead and things like that.
Hello?
Hey, Mr. Garman.
How do you, sir?
Pretty darn good. We were just about to jump into a conversation about whether it's time to throw out your books or not. And with the advent of, I don't know if you've heard of Oyster and Kindle doing their matchbook program and all this good stuff, I thought we would give you a call and let our resident author actually weigh in on the writing topic.
Well, my answer to this, when everyone asks me if paper books are doomed, is no, because even though we invented the elevator, we still have stairs. New technology does not preclude old technology. The book has been a pervasive and effective form of transmitting knowledge and information for 3,000 years, give or take, depending on how you count scrolls. So, no. They don't have revocable DRM licenses. They don't require batteries, and they physically can be passed on from one to another in ways that a lot of books don't allow that right now.
Yep.
That said, Oyster looks awesome.
Yeah, well, and I think that the place for something like an Oyster. Now, I agree with you, and I've got books that, you know, out of my cold, dead hands. You're going to tear those away from me and give those up as actual physical copy. Thanks. But I also have a tremendous number of books that really, am I going to go back? Do I need to pass those on from generation to generation? Am I even going to inflict them on someone? On someone else that I like, you know? Probably not. And those would be good candidates for saying they really never should have made it to print in the first place. So, the idea of an oyster, it just really, really appeals to me. And we should define oyster. Dave, you brought it up. Tell listeners exactly what oyster is and what it's about and why we're excited about it.
It's Netflix for books. It's for a set fee a month in the $10 range. You can download and read all the books you like that are in their library. A lot of the stuff is older titles, but there are some newer things. But you can read, basically you can read as much as you'd like. If you're a voracious reader, this is a perfect service for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think that at that price, it's kind of like that same mental calculation you did. I mean, with the example you gave of comparing it to the Netflix for books is perfect because you do that same mental calculation. It's like, you know, when Netflix was first coming out, it's like, am I really going to watch 2-3 movies, whatever it would cost for the rental in a month? And if the answer is yes, it just makes so much sense to do. And the same thing with books. I mean, at $15, at the price books are going right now, ebooks on Amazon and so on, you know, 1-2 books, and you've more than paid for your subscription.
Yeah, and if you're someone like me who almost never pays retail because he's a cheapskate, but is too impatient for the library, my cycle has been, all right, I go to Half Price Books, or something, a used bookstore, I buy titles that I've been wanting for a while. When they come in, I read them, and then I sell them back at a tremendous loss.
Yes.
To the bookstore. You know, that $4 book I get 50 cents for. Like, it's a 90% markdown. But I love my local library. I take my kids there all the time. I occasionally get audiobooks there for long trips. But all the books I want to read, being science fiction and generally relatively new, they have like maybe 2 copies. Yeah. And of the 10,000 hardcore sci-fi fans using the Louisville Free Public Library, it's going to be a long time before I get to read Red Shirts by John Scalzi if I just don't go buy it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And unbundling? Because we all know, back in the old days, you bought an album for 1 or 2 good songs on it, but the artist got paid for all 10 to 12 songs on the album. And now I can know that I don't have to buy the song. They only get compensated for plays. So it's the one song on the album that's good, and they only get paid for as long as it's tolerable to listen to.
Yes.
So it's not a song with long-term value. They get paid even less. Now, economically speaking, I understand the appeal of that. The issue for me is most people don't reread books.
Yeah.
So most books are read once and don't return to, unless it's Lord of the Rings or something like that. It's very unusual that books get repeat consumption.
Yeah.
Just because of the nature of the content. So I'm going to be very curious how the compensation model works out because, you know, it used to be, you know, hard, you know, if you got a hardcover book, it's, you know, you got a certain chunk of change, you got a trade paperback, you got a mass market paperback. It all, you know, depending on the distribution, you got different cuts and different slices as an author, but the fact of the matter is nobody bought the hardback and the paperback.
Yeah.
So you weren't getting repeats there. And there are a lot of authors who will tell you it was actually better to have been published in paperback first because of what they call in publishing the debt spiral, which is, all right, I signed in advance for $10,000, therefore, and they only publish me in hardback. I get $2 a copy sold. That means it's got to sell 5,000 copies for me to earn out my advance. If the hardback is so expensive at $25, it can't sell 5,000 copies, whereas in my advance of $10,000 for paperback, is so much, yeah, I have to sell more of them, but they're so much cheaper, it actually would have been better.
Yeah.
And the death spiral is, I got paid so much, so fast, and the book didn't live up to it, I never get a second book deal, because I get black marked as... I may never read it, but, oh, I wanted to read Red Shirts. I never read. I'm having it come down.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, It's an interesting point to make, you know, and you're right. There isn't that replay value with books. And that, I think, is part of what's driving this trend towards these series. You know, in the first, I think, that really pulled into a lot of people's consciousness right now was, you know, like Harry Potter series, you know, as being just an enormously, every book was bigger than the last, and the series just seemed to go on forever and ever and ever. But there's been a lot of series like that have gone through. But it seems that's even more common now. It seems like virtually, especially in the young adult fiction, that almost every book is not a complete book in and of itself. It's part of an ongoing series that may or may not have a defined end to it. And that, I think, that plays very, very well into the Oyster model, where you would sign up, and you could even work out potentially deals where you would sign up specifically for the entire series of a J.K. Rowling and say, okay, she's starting a new series, I'm going to pay you one price now and get every single book that ever comes out on this series, and I'm done with it. It just automatically downloads every time that's released. Have you noticed that, Jay, that there seems to be a more of a focus on the series type of books lately?
From the major publishers, yes, but that's because the major publishers, like all the legacy media publishers in any medium, are tied to the blockbuster model, which is everything has got to be, you know, Star Wars. Everything has got to be gigantic and make millions upon millions of dollars, and the ones that don't are underwritten by the big ones. So it's fail nine times, succeed wildly the tenth, and that pays for everything. And that's sort of what the major publishing houses are stuck in now, because they sort of have to justify their overhead, and that's really the only kind of book left that they are able to make profitably.
Yeah.
Independent presses are not at all bound by that. Now, there is the value of, with a series, once I've got a customer hooked, it's easy to remarket to that customer. But most of the indie press guys I know, and I know a few, that it doesn't have to be a book series. Once again, you hooked on an author, you'll keep buying that author even if the book itself is not a continuation of previous works by that author.
Yep.
And I do think ebooks, and especially these Oyster-like services, really play into that, because the other issue is, for really passionate readers or loyal readers, as soon as you're done with the book, you want to go get another book. And the nature of publishing is not that if you've got the new book out, there isn't going to be another book for at least a year. But if you can give me another book by this author or another book like this one really fast, there's a lot of value in that.
Yes. Yeah, and that is something that Amazon does very well, is, you know, when you have finished a book and you go back to get that next one, automatically there's a list of recommendations and suggestions for you to go and grab. Now, I have to confess, I'm like you. I am a cheapskate. So I do most of my reading through my library, and I get it through their online media collection. So I don't actually step foot in the library. I just use my iPad or my desktop, and I go grab it that way. And they do they make an attempt at an Amazon like or a Netflix like recommendations process, but it does not work as well as the others do. And the big problem that I have too with my library is kind of what you alluded to earlier. They don't have stuff that I want. They don't have newer stuff. And the stuff that they do have that I want and that's newer, everybody else wants it too. And you get put on a list for, you know, your number 273 out of 300 right now. when Cloud Atlas came out, in fact, that was a big problem. I really wanted to read it. I had it highly recommended to me. Had to wait forever to get that thing. And then to make it worse, and here's my personal pain point too, was it took me a long time to read it. I just I didn't get the concentrated time to read it as I wanted. You only have 14 days to read it in the library model before it gets returned, and then you have to go back on the waiting list. And That was in the last, like, chapter and a half, and it got returned. And I'm like, oh, no! It right at midnight. I was reading it at midnight, trying to finish desperately. And I turned the page, and it said, this book has been returned. You can go back on the waiting list. It's like, oh, God. The words that came out of my mouth at midnight, you don't want to hear. I can't say them on radio.
The FCC would have an opinion about that, yeah.
They would, a very, very strong one, as a matter of fact. So a thing like Oyster, where you're just, you read them as you want, like a Netflix thing, that does appeal to me a great deal. I think there's a lot of work that's going to happen on the licensing side, because, of course, the reason why that happens with the library books and so on, and why they have such a limited quantity, is the work that they've done with the publishers. The publishers have really kind of struggled against that model. You know, and that type of situation is one of those cases where you hate to say it, but you point at that and say, well, here's a perfect case for piracy. You know, I wanted this, I got it legitimately, but then you gave me so much problems and heartache and issue to actually read something that I obtained legitimately. I should just go out and grab it, you know?
Exactly. Well, and I think there's a way to set up an Oyster-like compensation model where every, like, a download that's active for 14 days, and if you re-look at it, maybe they spiff the offer again for that, you know, so if it takes longer. It's interesting how systems like that not necessarily distort the market, but inform the market, because there's a very good essay probably 2 months ago about how the Sci-Fi Channel's horrible movies like Sharknado are actually a result of Netflix, because Netflix, you know, you do feedback and the movies that are liked and so on and so forth, but Netflix wants a good inventory of extremely narrow categories, because Sharknado would be a disaster film as well as a shark attack film. There's actually a shark attack niche on Netflix, and they actually, it's gotten to the point where they want to commission very cheaply films that hit two or three of these niche categories just so that it looks like they have a lot of inventory. And they don't even really care if the films are any good or even watched. They just want to say, if you're into shark attack films, we have 25 of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I suspect that there could be something like that. I mean, there already is something like that in a very blunt and ineffective way in publishing. Oh, vampires are big. Publish everything with vampires in it.
Yes.
And beat them into the ground. Oh, werewolves are big. And, oh, wizards are big. Oh, kids doing archery is big. Okay.
Yeah. And that is a distressing thing. And I know I've mentioned that on air too before. Is that, that's one thing that really, really frustrates me with my library, the recommendation process there, is that because I have read some fantasy books, or I have read some vampire books or a zombie book, like every third book that pops up in the recommendation is a vampire harlequin romance, or a werewolf, you know, harlequin soft porn romance. And I was like, I don't want this.
Well, this is where you get into, and I found this out when I was doing recommendation engines back in my old web development days, is Amazon's people who read also read is way more effective than any categorization system you can come up with. Like, these are all vampire books. These are all sci-fi books. These are vampire sci-fi books where they cross over in the tagging. That's not, you can never get granular enough in your category tagging system to really help people. But if you just observe consumptive behavior, he read Leviathan, therefore he wants Behemoth and Goliath by Scott Westerfeld, is a pretty easy leap to make. But it also tells you, you might also want this Fiddler by Sherry Priest, because it's also sort of a steampunky alt history thing.
Yeah.
But you would never necessarily put the two together.
Yeah.
The great example that Jeff Bezos always gives is, the first time they launched that engine, the most popular book that just came out of nowhere was How to Organize Your Desk. and like, where is this coming from? And it was associated with all of these Zen and the art of motorcycle maintenance, Zen meditation.
Mm.
And you never would have thought to put organize a clutter-free desk with all of the Zen Buddhist philosophy stuff.
Yeah.
But you understand the connection when you see them next to each other. And the people who read also read Engine put that together that no curator would ever have thought of.
Yeah.
And no category system ever would have. So I'm hopeful that we can get good stuff like that out of systems like Oyster.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. You know, as opposed to the you read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Well, here's China Mayville's Kraken. You know, it's like no. These two.
The Hunt for Red October. They both have submarines.
Yeah,
it's not really the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, no, I would love to see it. Now, speaking of Kindle and Jeff Bezos, too, now they just came out with their program also, which they're calling Matchbook. And they call it, and I'm quoting here, an innovative new program which enables you to offer your Kindle book at a discount when readers purchase your print book. This has been sent to authors, letting them know that they can do this, and to publishers that they can do this. And so the idea would be that I could purchase, I could purchase that copy of Kraken, which, by the way, is a fantastic book, and you should read it. I could purchase that book of Kraken as a hard cover or as paperback, and maybe that's going to cost me, $9.95 if I buy it alone. For an extra couple of bucks, I get the e-copy too. And I think that's a great value proposition. There's a lot of books that I might buy that I certainly wouldn't buy them twice. But if for just a couple of extra dollars, I can get it on an ebook. In addition to having it on my library, that seems like a good deal to me. Oh no, I lost everybody. All right, let's try this again. I know we've been having a little bit of problems internally with our internet access, and in fact it looks like we just lost internet again. So I apologize too that anybody that's actually listening to us over the internet, if you can hear me again, which I hope that you can. Oh, hello. Here we go. Hello. Yeah, we had a little bounce on our internet today. Sorry about that.
Wasn't that my end for a change?
No, it was not on either of you. This was definitely an RLR studio. I can see, I mentioned earlier the fantastic work that that Christopher Zeman does here around the studio, and I can see him working hard actually as we speak on his day off. He's got nothing else to do here but just help us out with this issue, and that's what he's doing right now. So I was just saying that I like this idea of the Kindle Matchbook and being able to, for just a couple extra bucks, have both the hardcover and the Kindle copy available to you. It really, I think, makes it far more likely that I would double buy, quote unquote, a book, both the e-version and the hard version of it, just because of the way they're bundling it.
Probably, although I do think you're talking to two different buyers there. This really, to me, is going to be a short-lived notion. It's for people that they want to transition to e-readers. But to me, the physical book, even though I think it's never going away completely, in the next 15 years is going to become like the vinyl album. It's going to be for absolute bibliophiles. It's going to be a trophy. You're going to see a very nice, well-done collector edition of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the main way that prose is going to be consumed is going to be electronic. You've already seen that with magazines. I mean, not that magazines are gone, but their demographic has shifted very much beyond the mainstream.
Yeah.
That most people don't buy physical magazines anymore. They just go to the online version. And I do think that longer form prose is going to go the same way, even though I don't read pretty much anything long form electronically. That to me is more an indictment of the reading technology right now than anything else. When they get a really good reading tablet that's cheap and isn't e-ink, I will probably finally jump on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
it's either really good or it's e-ink, and it's either not cheap or it's very cheap.
See, and I'm already well on the other side of things, where it's very rare for me now to pick up a hard copy of a book, for a long form book. I'm especially thinking too, I think there's a couple of areas where this would be very, very useful. One, it'll be with those classic books, anything that you have to read for a class also is going to be really valuable, I would think, to have on both the Kindle version and a hard copy version for the different environments that you want to study and research and use something like that. But I agree with you. I think we are going to see that. I mean, we're seeing that. We already have kind of seen that happen with DVDs. DVD is still, they still put them out, I know, a lot. But the DVDs that get any attention or attraction are these box sets, special features, collector's edition kind of stuff, because people just don't consume on DVD so much anymore. They're more than happy to consume it via Netflix or HBO Go or however it is that they, or Hulu Plus, however they want to grab it.
Right. It's really for the cinephiles who want the full Blu-ray director's commentary plus the souvenir coasters and making of poster and Green Lantern power ring that all come with it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Or I would probably not go and watch and rewatch the Walking Dead series as much as I love it. But boy, seeing that Walking Dead DVD collector's edition case and all the extras that came with it and all this, and it's like, oh, that would be awesome. I would love to have that. But yeah. But I know in my mind, okay, if I even went back and watched like two or three of my favorite episodes, that would probably be like the extent of the use of the actual DVDs that I would ever have.
Well, and that's sort of like, my wife to this day doesn't understand why I don't own all the DVDs of Star Trek The Next Generation. I said, one, I can probably recite most of the episodes if I had to. And two, my fix is always, when I'm idly surfing, like, oh, there's a Next Gen episode on, I'll just finish this. And that sort of does it for me.
Yeah.
Because I've sort of internalized that enough now. I'm past that. Like we all go through that stage as kids in music. Like, when you find a song you like, you want to beat it into the ground. And I think when you get in your preteens to mid-teens, you're the same way with TV shows. Like, you want to watch them over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. But I think pretty much once you're past college, you sort of wake up to this, that was really great, and I might want to see that movie once a year and that TV show once every couple of years, but I don't need to beat it into the ground. There's too much new stuff. And I think it's the same issue with books. And I think a service like Oyster might be what gets me into the electronic side, because if I'm really honest, one of the real barriers to me is they still want to charge what I consider are exorbitant prices for e-books.
Yep.
And my library system doesn't have a good e-book lending system like the Chicago Library does, so it's like, I don't want to go pay $15 for an ebook when I know that if some software glitch comes up, that $15 is gone.
Yeah.
If I drop $15 on an Amazon special hardback, I got it. It's sort of fire or flood, it's still there.
Yes. Yeah, and that's exactly right. You know, and honestly, though, that's one of the struggles that the publishers have, though, too, is that, there were a lot of double purchases and second and third purchases because of loss, because books got lost, they got lent out and then never returned, they got burnt, they got broken and cut, or they'd recover them. This happened to me more than once, and boy, did I tear my hair out. They'd recover it, and you'd look at it, and you'd read the back, and you'd say, boy, this sounds great. It sounds a little bit like something I read a while ago, but I'm not sure. So you buy it, you get it home, you get to chapter two, and you're like, oh, gosh darn it, I've already got this. and that's just not going to happen anymore. That kind of thing is not going to be a profit center for these guys. Hey, you know what? I apologize. I gotta bring us to a close here on this, because we gotta talk about geek trivia from last week. We had a great question, very timely as well. We didn't talk about the news over at Microsoft by Nokia, but we did have a trivia question last week about Steve Ballmer and where he worked before he was at Microsoft, and who was his cube mate or his office mate?
Right. So after Steve Ballmer graduated magna cum laude from Harvard in 1977 with a degree in economics and mathematics, so whatever else you think about the guy, he ain't dumb. Mm-hmm. He went directly to work in Cincinnati for Procter & Gamble as a sales guy. And he sold, let me make sure I've got this exactly right, his job was to sell the Cold Snap Freezer Dessert Maker, whose tagline was, makes revolutionary desserts you never could have thought of before. and after that, he went and sold the Moist and Easy Snack Cake. Neither of which exist anymore, because this was from the late 70s, but this is what he did right out of, and he shared a cube and traded sales tips with some guy named Jeffrey Immelt, who went on to head a little organization called General Electric.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Huh.
Wow.
Man, so he's working for P&G selling confections, basically.
Yes. And he liked it so much that he left and went to Stanford Business School, and liked that so much he dropped out to become Microsoft's first business manager in 1980, and the rest, as they say, is history. He's worked nowhere else for the past 30 years.
Wow, you know, and you gotta, you know, give kudos to Bill Gates, who didn't he famously so now he not only grabbed one of his longest running CEOs from the snack industry, but he also too grabbed the CEO of Coke at the time, Lee, I think it was Lee Iacocca, right, and said, do you want to sell sugar water the rest of your life?
No, that was Steve Jobs pitched to the Apple CEO, and I'm blanking on his name, that eventually fired him. Was, do you want to sell sugared water or do you want to change the world?
That was it. That was it. I'm getting my my tech icons terribly confused. So, but the snack industry, in short, has supplied us with a lot more than just sugary sweets.
Well, and they're expert at branding and marketing, which is frankly where the rubber meets the road when you want to go become a world changing organization, as Steve Jobs well knows, before he passed away.
Yes. Well, yes. Exactly. No, that is absolutely true. Well, you know what? It is right at the end of the hour here, so I'm going to have to pull this to a close. Thanks for sticking around with this, Jay, though, and putting up with our minor technical hiccup and snafu there in the middle of the show. I'm going to let both of you guys go here. I'm going to try to get in maybe one cool side of the week, and then I'm going to close us out. But what a great week we had. Thank you so much, and have an excellent week. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
All right, take care, fellas.
Thanks, Jay.
Take care. Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right, thanks, Dave. Take care. Jay Garman, Dave Sanaki. Oh man, it's great having guys like that on the show. What an awesome conversation. If you're a big reader like the bunch of us, there's so many places to go to get books still. Don't forget about your local library. Always love telling you about that. Hey, you know what? I wanted to give one cool side of the week before we head off. I'm not even going to play the tune here because it's been a while since I've done a cool side of the week. We talked last week about Google Maps. We had Daniel Seberg on, and what a great job he did talking about Google Maps and Waze, two of my favorite applications for getting around. But what if you've got an old cell phone that doesn't have 3G or 4G access? It's only got Wi-Fi access. What if you want to use that for navigation? There is a way to do it. NavFree USA. It's a free satellite navigation utility. As long as you've got GPS on your phone, you can download the maps in advance for the states and also to many, many countries around the world. Use it anytime you want, and away you go. It's really very, very cool. I downloaded and used this in Illinois here just to test it out. A lot of fun, works great, doesn't have anything live with the traffic, doesn't need to download anything while you're driving around. It just works as a TomTom-like or Garmin-like navigation system. That's NavFree.com. USA. You can find it in the Android store, and I'll put a link up to it as well. I am going to play you a podcast-only song of the week. I'm going to play you a little song I just ran across. Actually, this is pretty cool. It's by a group called A Mason, and the song is called Went to War. You've been listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Don't forget to go check us out, techtalk.wrlr.fm or facebook.com/techtalkwrlr, all one word. Thanks for listening, everyone. Come back next week. Talk to you later. And here's Went to War by A. Mason.
Went to war for a lovable feeling. Tear another instant apart. Held two pieces of a corner while I was speeding. Never wash yourself out ashore. Better up with the water cut off. The only living proof I got is just the sand that I was made of. The tired building it all. I found a quiet place I lost. It's just a cell upon the river.
Cleanse two places where the bottom line. Scattered with a rain cloud, still hope to fall. I'm not running, I'm not failing, nor I'm evading. Wonder where the nerves are, still numb. Better off with the water cut off. God, it's just the sermon I was made of. Got tired of building it up. I found the quiet place I lost. It's just a cell upon the river. Just a sand that I was made of. Got tired of building it all. I found the quiet place I lost. It's just a cell upon the river.